I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Joan Sotkin back to the show. Joan has been guiding entrepreneurs and practitioners building successful businesses and resolving money issues for over 30 years. She's the founder of the popular website prosperityplace.com, host of the Prosperity Show podcast, and author of the award-winning book, Build Your Money Muscles. Joan is known for her insightful understanding of the connection between money and emotions and how family of origin experiences affect a person's ability to succeed in business and financially. Joan, welcome back to Smashing the Plateau.
Hi, David. It's great to be here.
So you were on the show on episode 217, which is just about a year ago. And the last time you were on, we spoke about how family of origin experiences affect a person's ability to succeed in business. And I personally found it very thought-provoking. I have to tell you that. It's really resonated with me ever since. And in preparing to have you back on the show again, I was really caught by something I noticed about what you're doing now, which has to do with people who are financially successful, not those that are struggling. And in particular, I'm curious to know what your take is on why people who are financially successful still struggle.
Well, they struggle personally. Sometimes people will say they're struggling financially, but the fact is, it's never about money. It's always about something that's going on internally that you have brought with you from your very often very distant past. And the theory that I work with now and that I've built a course around is that everything about you is a habit. And if something isn't working in your life, that's because of the way you're making your choices, which are based on your habitual thoughts, beliefs, and emotions. So, because everything that happens in your life is the result of a decision you've made, of the choices you made. And so it's not that the decision is bad. It's that the thoughts, beliefs, and emotions behind that decision somehow led you to that dysfunctional decision. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but Joan, aren't you also impacted by decisions others make that affect you?
Yes, but how you respond to those decisions is your decision.
That's true. It is your own choice how you respond.
Yes, and that's why I think it's so important to understand that everything in your life is the result of your decisions. So if someone says, well, someone did something to me, well, the outcome for you is how you respond. If you take something personally that someone else says to you, you're going to respond very differently from the way you would if you just accept what they said and walked away from it. So every one of your actions has a decision behind it. And when you can understand the habits behind your decisions, then there's nothing wrong with you. You've never done anything wrong. It's just a habit that's getting in the way. And you can use brain science to change those habits. So much that goes on in the personal growth and development field is about what's wrong with me that needs fixing. And I think that's a very demeaning way of looking at things. That if you understand it's all a matter of habits and brain science, then you can say, okay, what do I have to do to change it?
Yeah, it sounds almost too easy.
Yeah, it's simple, not easy. Because everybody will resist making changes in their life. And there's a brain science reason for that. In your brain, you have this thing called the amygdala.
mm-hmm.
whose job it is to keep you safe. And the thing the amygdala can't stand is uncertainty. So when you start doing something differently than you have in the past, the outcome is uncertain. And your amygdala says to you, danger, danger. So you stop doing the new thing that you were doing because the fear sets in and you go back to what you were doing before. And that's where our resistance comes in. But if you understand that the amygdala is creating this fear because of something that might happen in the future, and you stay focused in the present, then you can overcome those messages from the amygdala.
How?
One little step at a time.
You knew I was going to ask that.
Well, it's the, you know, when I work with people, they always say, okay, now what do I do? And everybody wants a solution right away. So I use a 4-step process. And the process is recognize, release, replace, and repeat. So the recognize is when you're in fear, which is the normal thing that's going to happen when you do something new. When you're in fear, you say, okay, what am I feeling? And the first thing you say, well, I'm afraid. What are you afraid of? And you're going to say, well, I'm afraid I'm going to lose my money or something like that. And remember, it's never about money, so money is not the appropriate answer. But to ask yourself, what am I really feeling? And where am I feeling it? People think that their feelings happen in their head, but they really happen in our body parts. They're actually these neuropeptides that attach themselves to receptors in our cells. That's how you get feelings like feelings in your gut or feelings in the back of your neck or where you feel contracted. That's the feeling I'm interested in. What are you actually experiencing kinesthetically in your body? And once you recognize that, then you say to yourself, okay, because you don't have to give it a name. Most people aren't very good at giving names to their feelings. So when did I feel this before? And most people have a memory of some sort come up. And then you say, well, what would I rather be feeling? And do I know how to feel that? For example, if you're feeling betrayed in a certain situation. Can we use that as an example?
Absolutely.
Okay, so someone...
It's happened many times.
Okay, so, I'm using common ones, okay? So you're feeling betrayed. Now remember, you feel betrayed. The other person just did what they do. You have a choice as to how you respond to that behavior on their part. But because you're responding from a habitual place, the habitual is to feel betrayed. And so once you recognize that, then you can say, okay, when did I feel this before? And daddy probably did something, or mommy probably did something, or, you know, there's any number of stories that can be behind that when you were a kid. And once you recognize that and let yourself kind of stay with the feeling for a few moments, so you're not just pushing it away, and then you say, what would I rather be feeling? So give me an example of what you think that you would rather be feeling if you felt betrayed.
Supported.
Supported. So the next question is, do you know how to feel supported? And a lot of people don't. In other words, Their basic platform is, I just don't feel supported by anybody, and that usually shows up as under-earning or over-earning. Over-earning is where you have to have another million no matter what. When you don't feel supported, then you're usually working at something that you're not really happy about, that you look at your clothes closet and you say, oh, I really don't have the clothes I like. Because not feeling supported means that on some level, you're not supporting yourself either. Can you see that?
Yeah. And is that tied? Can that be tied to insecurity?
Well, everything is tied. I mean, there's no such thing as a feeling that exists by itself. It's like notes that have overtones.
Mm-hmm.
There's always overtones and undertones to feelings as well. But if you feel betrayed and you want to say, feel supported, well, what does supported feel like? Recently, within the last year, I started looking at the feeling of touched, because I think that feeling touched and connected is one of our basic needs. And I was still having trouble drawing in the clients that I wanted, and the money was still kind of a little bit on the edge. You know, I would go up and down and up and down. So I said, okay, what's going on? And I had been looking at connection and touch. And I said to myself, well, am I being touched? Because I had been touch deprived as a child. And I looked at it and I said, well, how do humans touch each other, adult humans touch each other? They do handshakes and hugs, and they smile at each other. They listen to each other, and they hand each other money. That's a way of being touched. And I said to myself, is it true that I'm not being touched? And I looked at it and I said, I watched how people were saying hello to me and they give me big smiles. I have 8,000 people on my mailing list, which means that many people have touched me at some point. And I realized I am being touched. I didn't know how to really feel touched. And so every night before I went to bed, I would remember all the wonderful things that happened during the day and allow myself to feel touched, which took some practice. And I did it every night. And in about 2 weeks, it was amazing how much opened up for me.
Wow. And what was the result once things opened up?
I started making more money and the clients I wanted started showing up. So, you know, when people say, I want to get the clients and I want to make more money. Well, you have to feel connected and touched. It's like one of the reasons people go and do spending, overspending, compulsive spending. That's all the need for touch. Because when you hand someone your money or your credit card and they hand you something back, that's actually a way of being touched.
Right. So what I'm hearing from you is that there's a huge connection between money and emotion.
Oh, everything is connected to emotions. And people just don't want to know that.
Yeah. So can you go back to the steps, those four steps that you mentioned again?
Right. Okay. So recognize, which is recognize what you're feeling. Are you feeling? And some people have to start with just feeling contracted. In other words, if you don't have a good feeling vocabulary, that's fine. There's always a place to start. So recognize, release. Now, the release is expressing the feeling using one of the energy psychology techniques, making the sound of the feeling. That's something I teach. And just saying out loud, I'm feeling so contracted. That's actually expressing the feeling. Or I feel so betrayed, or I'm so disappointed. That's part of the release. The third step is replace. Whatever you're feeling in the moment is a habit. So what habit would you rather have in the same circumstance? And do I know how to feel that, the thing I'd like to feel? When I started doing this work a very long time ago, I made a long list of feelings. And I used to go down the list practicing the feeling, because we all have that capacity. It's just a matter of habit. So, for example, if you're feeling habitually trapped or burdened or overwhelmed or angry, these are just habits. There's nothing wrong with you. And once you recognize that you can choose to respond differently, and here's where the brain science comes in. Because once you recognize, release, and replace, what you're doing is building up new neural pathways in your brain so that your response, your automatic response, becomes a different one.
Yeah, and overwhelm is one that people in leadership roles often feel.
Okay, and understandably, because they usually take on too much.
Correct.
Okay, so...
And they don't say no frequently enough.
Okay, one of my favorite expressions, it has two parts. First part is, if one of us has to be uncomfortable, it doesn't have to be me. And part two is, no is a complete sentence.
Love it.
I even made a t-shirt that says, if one of us has to be uncomfortable, it doesn't have to be me. And so this is the kind of stuff I work with people in, I do with people in higher up positions, because they're so achievement oriented and they all want to do the right thing. And they're so afraid of doing it wrong and getting in trouble that they don't pay attention to themselves, which makes it very difficult to trust your intuition, which is where you're getting the answers that you need. And to me, the real sign of a mature leader is being able to detach well enough to say, this is what I think is right, and what you think of me is none of my business.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more.
And I mean, I work with a number of people. Now, here's where the childhood stuff comes in. I have a number of clients in high-level positions. Some of them are management, and they have, you know, like 30 direct reports, that kind of thing. And they're making plenty of money, but something just isn't right. They feel anxious, very often suffer from adrenal fatigue. That's something I always look at. They're drinking lots of coffee and they're not sleeping right, and they feel draggy all the time. And that's adrenal fatigue, because when you're always pushing to the next level and being overwhelmed, that all causes an adrenal response, and your body is going to respond to that. So what I look at is, okay, what happened really early in life that can cause that kind of discomfort? One client had two therapist parents, and when he was five, his younger brother died at 2 years old. And that just formed the trajectory of his life from that point on. Can you imagine how hypervigilant his parents became all the time? But because they had one son left, they're always worried about that son. And so he learned how to be hypervigilant and never relax. And so he was killing himself.
I can only imagine.
Okay. I've had a number of clients where there was a death of a parent at an early age, or even up to age 20, that really impacted them. Or a parent left. One client whose parent left when he was 2 years old. Do you think he trusted anybody?
Nope.
Okay. And what amazes me is that this has not become common knowledge. Now, there is a book called Childhood Disrupted by Donna Jackson Nakazawa, which talks about how early childhood experiences affect you, not only in life, but biologically. It can actually cause genetic changes. And there's a 10 question questionnaire called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Test that's available easily online. ACEstoohigh.com has it. And it just outlines things like death of a parent, divorce, alcoholism in the family, abuse of any kind, neglect. And any of those things will set the pathway for a difficult adulthood.
And what I'm hearing you saying also is you can recognize it and you can make some changes.
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't have any formal education in this area. When people say to me, what are your credentials? I say, I was really screwed up, and now I'm fine. Because this information wasn't available 30 years ago. And I had to figure out, you know, what the problem was and how to create a new way of living. And, you know, part of the problem is, too, we become so habituated to these less than functional habits that when we start changing them, it's actually a threat to our self-concept. If I see myself as someone who is always taken advantage of, I have to reframe who I am to be a person who never gets taken advantage of, who's always on top of things. And it's compounded by the fact, remember I talked about creating new neural pathways? Well, what happens is you've got these old neural pathways in your brain that represent the old habits. And as you start changing the habits, you create new neural pathways. But when you start go to do something, your brain gets confused. Which way am I supposed to go? And you get what I call the moving stupids, which is where you go to do something new and you can't remember what you were supposed to do. You move into a new house and you don't know where anything is and you bump into walls and it's disorienting. So you have to be willing to say, oh, this is just the moving stupids. I'll get over it.
Wow. Okay. So recognize, release, replace. And what was the fourth step?
Repeat.
Repeat.
That's how you create new neural pathways, by doing it over and over and over again.
Love it. Love it. Joan, whom do you know personally who has done a remarkable job at smashing the plateau?
A lot of my friends are older. I'm older. A lot of my friends are older. So they've had a chance to kind of look at their life. But I'm thinking of one of my friends who has a very strong background in IT, and she had a podcast, a business podcast, and she had this yearning to follow her creative instincts. And we've been, since we were each on each other's podcasts, we've been talking to each other every 2 weeks, and she decided to just follow her urge. And she started doing painting. She and her husband moved up to the Bay of Fundy from Toronto. So they're in this more isolated place. And she created a studio for herself. And she loves what she's doing now and just is so centered in who she is and what she's doing. And is taking her same ability to teach others into the work she's doing now. And she's just not worrying about where it's going. And it's just beautiful to watch it.
Great example. Joan, do you think that the world has more possibilities to be able to smash the plateau because of things like technology and globalization?
Yes. And right now, we're going through a very chaotic time. In 1975, I got this message in meditation that we were going into a period of great chaos, that the chaos in the Middle East would become so bad that people would say, how could a benevolent God allow this to happen? That many people would leave the planet and there would be a lot of confusion. And at the same time, people were being trained to be points of light in the midst of the chaos. And if you look at cycles of life, cycles in the world, there's often destruction before there's new growth. There's often death before new growth. And we're going through a period on the planet now where everything that we thought was real is being destroyed. And it's very hard to stay peaceful in the midst of the chaos. But if we understand that this is just a cycle that humanity is going through, I know I may not see the end of this cycle, but it's happening, and that we can be the harbingers of smashing the plateau on the planet by finding that peace within ourselves so that the energy of peace reaches a tipping point, and that's what wins out. Does that make sense?
It sounds great. And it's a very positive message, after which I'd love to hear what the future holds for you and what's coming up for Joan.
I kind of take it one day at a time. And I've just been working on redoing my website. I'm moving into some very new things. Rather than business building, I think prosperity is a reflection, is an extension of what's going on within you. And you can't be really prosperous unless you're peaceful inside. So I'm starting to really focus on the peaceful piece. My course, Rewire Your Brain for Prosperity and Financial Freedom, goes into this whole thing about the habits. So I'd like to teach people how to create the habit of inner peace.
Sounds great. And how can listeners learn more about you and follow you?
Prosperityplace.com leads to everything that I do.
Sounds great. Well, Joan, thanks so much for coming back onto Smashing the Plateau. It's been great having another conversation with you, being able to share what you offer to our listeners. My guest today has been Joan Sotkin, the president of Prosperity Place, Inc. Thank you again, Joan, for joining us.
My pleasure. I hope to do it again.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions, where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.